Welcome, everybody. Beer Guys Radio Show. Welcome back. Thanks for joining us for another episode. We are happy to be here. We're happy to have some beer. It's going to be a good time. I am Tim Dennis. Brian Hewitt, how you doing?
I'm doing good. We've got some interesting topics to talk about. We've got some brewery purchases, some of them that you might expect and some of them you might not expect. We're going to talk a little bit about some long beers, which I enjoy. And we've got some interesting beer laws and some other technology things that are going to be kind of neat. So we're going to get into that. But before we do, we've got Mo Mike Nate with us here. Yeah.
How's it going, Mo Mike? Name change, Mo Mike.
I like it. You know, it doesn't roll quite off the tongue as well as No Mike Nate, you know, that alliteration. But
it's
Mo
close,
Mike,
though. It's pretty close.
Yeah, I'm swapping in an N for an M.
It's all about practice. I mean, at least it's not I now have a microphone, Nate, because that doesn't roll off the tongue at all.
That would be awful.
Not at all.
It's like, guess what, guys? Nate has a microphone. That's Nate, his name.
Yeah, guess what? I now have a mic.
We just had a lot of change in a very short amount of time.
We did. We were fired off.
I have a microphone.
Yeah. We even did some more updates to our graphics today. We got some more caricatures of the rest of the squad. So like our Facebook page and our website and stuff have some fancy pants graphics on it. We're pretty proud of it. And we have been playing with the short videos. Brian, you know, this is the rage these days. Short form videos. I haven't got on TikTok yet. I'm still trying to hold off, but like YouTube shorts and that we did. Brian, you and I did a brewery visit last weekend to Six Bridges Brewing in Milton, Georgia. They call it Six Bridges Crab Apple. And we did a little video there about taking a quick visit there. We did our cheer wine review. We did a 60-second cut down of that, put it out there. So just messing around with content. So go check it out. Check out our YouTube page. Check out our Instagram. Get all our content outside of the podcast. Like it and validate me. Tell me it looks good and validate my efforts. Because really, it's the only way I get through the week, to be quite honest with you.
You know, I thought I was just getting old and I would not care for the short format, but I'm kind of addicted to a couple of the ones out there. And like obviously ours are great, but we're just starting out on them.
Right.
There's this guy, Chef Reacts, that does all those horrible, stupid things on Instagram that people do with food. And his responses to him, he's such a jerk, and I love it. I just love it. And I watched every single one of them back to back, and I'm not typically one to do that. And I just keep looking for more of that. Like, I think I'm following him on Twitter just to see when he posts more of them. I won't go to TikTok for this. And I think that's what most of his stuff is. But I'll watch the heck out of it on YouTube. I'm down with
YouTube shorts, so, Instagram reels. I've even fell into the Facebook shorts a little bit because they're so convenient when I'm on Facebook doing stuff. But y'all, we've got a little New Jersey brewery law update for you. So Bob, we've chatted a few times before, but he's got a brief update. He told us earlier that the New Jersey brewery rule is moving along. And to expand on that a little bit, right now, breweries are limited to how many events and food trucks they can have. Like they were telling us, we had Augie Carton on the show not long ago, and he was saying like they can't even tell you if there's a food truck there, that you have to just pop up, and if you're hungry, hope that there's a food truck there. But apparently, as we're recording this, the law passed the first step and going into the next for unlimited events and food trucks at breweries in New Jersey. Y'all, we wish you the absolute best of luck, because really, if you can't have a restaurant, if you can't do this or you can't do that, at least let the folks have a food truck. Mm-hmm. You know, go to your brewery, have a couple beers, get whatever the food truck happens to be and have a good time.
Well, so it's
just
tough.
Just
now.
Makes sense, in my opinion.
It's tough now with all the breweries. The industry in general is more mature. It's slowing down. It doesn't have the hype. So it's not like everybody running out and buying every single thing craft out there. So you need to be able to advertise every kind of interesting thing you've got going on. If you've got an event that will bring somebody out, let people talk about it so people know, I want to go out and see that, and not just hold it in secret and hope that people find out, you know?
You know, I'd forgotten about it, but it wasn't long here. Like, if someone went on a brewery's social media and said, I really love X beer, where can I get it? They couldn't respond to that. They couldn't tell them our beer is at so-and-so or what have you. So that is, just crazy. Some of the laws out there are absolutely crazy. Just nuts, oh man. Yeah, and Rich Watson, Rich just joined us here, and he was asking us, did we mention the burnt hickory news? We have not yet, but we got the word today that one of our favorite breweries, one of the OG favorites of ours, Brian, we did a lot with this brewery. Scott Hedin, good friend. I absolutely hate him. He's horrible and a really great friend. Total pain in the butt.
Best friend. I hate him.
Absolute nightmare. Can't stand the guy. Really good friend. And he's been on the show very lively a few times. But he just announced today they're having a pause brewery operations, and they're closing their tap room indefinitely. Now, I will say there's some information that's not quite public information, but there is a plan to move ahead. It was just delayed due to some things. So this is what they have to do right now, open through the end of the month. Brian, we're just seeing so much of this, not just in Georgia, but breweries closing all around. And we've had two big, well-known and popular breweries here in Georgia in the last month. And I'm afraid we're going to see more of it, you know, as things change.
The chickens, the COVID chickens have come home to roost, I think. Right, yeah. Like generally, the industry is not, again, not booming like it once was. It has slowed down. It's gotten more mature. But you have to deal with the fact that there was probably a lot of debt taken on and a lot of extreme measures taken to survive the whole COVID situation. And if it doesn't get paid off by customers coming back in droves after the fact, I can understand why some places aren't going to make it.
Sure.
They're going to have to push pause, or they're going to have to call it quits indefinitely. I mean, or just close completely. I mean, it's just going to happen.
Here in Georgia, one thing unique here is that we've mentioned this before. We just got the right, or our breweries just got the right to direct to consumer sales back in 2017. Any brewery that opened before that had to open under a distribution model. They had to know that distribution was going to be where they were going to have their growth, where they were going to have their revenue. Because on-site and taproom sales were not really that important at the time, most breweries went for the cheapest real estate they could find to open up a production facility. So you ended up in industrial parks, back in commercial mixed-use areas where there was no foot traffic, there weren't any people coming around. Well, with the law changes, not just the law changes here in Georgia, but just really with consumer buying habits, it's a lot more of an on-premise game now. People come to the brewery, they drink, they enjoy it there. Breweries are offering more where you're not going to an industrial facility that pours beer. You know, there's games, there's other drinks in that. Our friends at Burnt Hickory, they were one that opened back, I think established 2012, actually opened in like 2013, but they were back in an old mixed use development, and there was nothing else really around there. So no foot traffic. You had to make it a point. That's where you're going was mm-hmm. Burnt Hickory. When they opened, that was not a big deal because everybody made it a point to go to the breweries they wanted to go to. But now a lot of the places that you normally go to eat dinner, or you go shopping, or you go out to have fun, there's a good chance there's going to be a brewery close by. So people are hitting the ones that are there. Here where I live, I've got two breweries less than 3 miles from the house in our downtown/entertainment district. There's also several bars there. And it used to be from me to Burnt Hickory, I would not pass a single other brewery. And now I will pass at least four, getting to Burnt Hickory. So
it's changed, man. The other thing too, back on episode 333 with Kelly Meyer, How Not to Start a Damn Brewery, he was talking about how he was surprised that even the larger breweries, and now when he went to try and like merge his brewery with them, they couldn't even take him on. They were just as bad off as he was pre-pandemic. Yeah. And so these breweries that we have around us that perceptionally look like they're doing well just might not be.
Sure. I mean, great point there. You see a lot of people out there that, what do they call it, lipstick on a pig or something. And I'm not hating on breweries or anything, but you can dress it up and you can look good and still be struggling, underneath there. But Kelly's like, hey, you guys want to merge? You're like, all we'll do is suck together.
We can barely hang. And that's the thing. It's you can't tell until the very last second that things are going badly, because I mean, I think that drives people away, that people are less likely to go like, oh, the brewery is failing. Like, now, I think that when you announce that you're closing or whatever, people do come out to support you in the end say of things. But I think there's a stigma against like, hey, we're doing rough. We don't want to admit we're doing rough, because I think it'll make us look bad and make us less appealing, because they want to go out to a brewery that's just killing it. They don't want to go out to one that's struggling. And I don't know it doesn't necessarily mean that the beer is bad. The beer could be just as great as it's always been, but the stigma of struggling and having a bad time makes people steer clear. I don't know. It's like a biological evolutionary kind of response. Oh, that thing is sick. I'm going to avoid it. I'm like,
yeah,
I think that's what that is.
I think a lot of people, there's a sense of pride there too, that they're like, look, sure. We're a solid brewer. We don't want anybody to fear us going away or anything, but you know, we're here having a good time. I want you to come have a good time with us and drink our beer. It's tough, man. It's a tough place to be in. You know, no company wants to say, hey, we're struggling. Well, oddly enough, this was a weird one, Brian. One of our local pizza places actually started a GoFundMe and said, hey, we're hurting. We need to stay open. So they started a GoFundMe. Interesting approach to do that. So it's let's see different. How big their fan base is.
And that's the thing. That might be what it takes to keep them going, and they might be incredibly successful. Not horrendously. That's about
horrendously one, successful.
Yeah, horrendously successful after this.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's a different approach. I mean, they're admitting, hey, we're having some issues. We're not closed yet, but if you guys don't help us out, we're probably going to.
If you want pizza, give us money.
Yeah.
You don't get pizza now, but if you still want to keep getting pizza, we need some money.
Maybe so. Scott,
give us Burn money Hickory. Now for pizza later.
Yeah.
Maybe Scott over at Burn Hickory should start a GoFundMe.
That's it. I'd pitch in.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what?
Rock and roll, man. Yeah.
Maybe it's like last week when we were talking about like how much would you pay in to bring a beer back? Well, how much would you pay in to keep a brewery around?
To bring a brewery back or keep a brewery, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's an even more pertinent question, honestly, because I think I would probably throw more money at a GoFundMe to keep a brewery alive or bring them back than I might for just an individual beer.
The new trend, rather than starting your GoFundMe when you launch,
it's a GoFundMe when you're failing.
Help me out here. So, Brian,
help us pay our mortgage.
Yes, please help us pay the mortgage. You can sponsor us for just the price of one mortgage payment a month. Wait, for less than $47 a day.
Yeah.
You too. Brian, got a question for you, man. Hot topic that went around on the various socials. Fresh ale, Brian. Do you like fresh ales?
I like fresh ale. Yeah, I like ale that's fresh. I don't like it stale. And I don't. Yeah, I do. I like it cold and fresh.
So I don't know if this is a style. They're calling it a category. And this in the UK, started by a UK brewer called Fresh Ale. And they said that this is what was initially brewed as cask ales. But instead of going into casks, they gently carbonate before putting them into keg. They're also served slightly cooler than your typical cask ales. So are you following me so far, Brian?
I think so. Like
Nate, are you following me?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Okay. So you take your cask ale, you lightly carbonate it, you put it in a keg, and you serve it at a little bit lower temperature than typical cask ale, and you call it a fresh ale. Boom.
So they're making a beer.
So I'm gonna say
pseudo cask.
And I'm going to get grief for this because I'm like, okay, I get what they're doing. I get what they're doing. I see the delineation, the demarcation point or whatever between cask ale. We're not going quite fully carbonated American craft beer here, but we're taking a step away from cask, putting it in a keg, which will keep it fresher longer than a cask would. A little bit of forced carbonation is going to keep it fresher longer. Brian, I was on board with it. I'm like, I'm cool with it. But I think I was the only one, including several brewers that we talked to, that thinks this is worth anything and is anything other than marketing.
I think I want to try it before I judge it because I kind of like the low idea of lower carbonation because I've seen now I've tried cask versions of beers that are typically American carbonated and served at American cold temperatures. And I've seen how good they can be at cask temperatures. I'm willing to give it a shot, but yeah, I put it out on Twitter. Like I saw this, I'm like, hey, what do you guys think? And we've got some cask mark breweries or establishments, venues here. One's a brewery, one's a bar. And I put it out to them.
And a craft beer bar. Right.
Yes. Yes. And I put it out to them. Is this legit? Is this like a real new style, new category of beer? And good word got back to me and they said they think it's marketing. They're trying to sell their beer to people that are interested in beer at cooler temperatures. And I think it's not so much that I think it's like trying to grasp some of the the feeling for cask without actually delivering cask, and people that want a colder beer. And I mean,
they're trying to cross the streams here, Brian.
Yeah.
They're trying to appeal to your typical, you know, draft beer drinker and cask beer drinker here and see if they can, you know, take the two together. They're putting the chocolate in the peanut butter.
Oh, yeah. So I do like that. I do like that a great deal.
Yeah.
I kind of like the idea. I like the creativity of it. I'm like, hold on. Maybe people have tried this, but nobody's really trying this on a serious scale where they announce it to the public and make it available. I went to their website and they actually do have a variety of different options that they've gone the fresh ale approach. And I'd try it. I'd like to see it done with the beer that I know, though. I mean, because this is the UK, I don't know if I would like the beer to begin with in its normal state, if I would like this fresh ale concept. I'd like it from my frame of reference. But I think it is marketing, but I also think that there could be something here, possibly.
Yeah, I agree with you, Brian. I'd like to try it. Let's see what it's all about. I'm not ready to totally brush it off to marketing yet, despite what our brewer friends say. I would still give it a shot and see, you know, kind of what I may like it. I may like it because I've had cask ales that I enjoy, but I would not classify myself as a cask ale fan. So that's kind of maybe this one that's a little bit cooler, a little more carved might hit that spot for me there.
And you had the one, what I'm trying to think of what the porter
the most
was.
Recent one.
Yeah. What the most,
yeah,
recent
that was
porter
a good
was.
Word. English porter on cask.
Yes. And yeah. It was dynamite.
It was great.
I can't imagine it would be any better with slightly colder, with slightly more carbonation. I think it was beautiful as is. And I could see why they were the ones with the opinion that it's marketing. I can see why you spent a lot of time and money and effort getting this to a beautiful spot, verified it's beautiful. And somebody comes along and like, oh yeah, yeah, I can take this and just put less carbonation
do
in
this
it, put
and
it in a
that.
Keg and boom, same thing. It's cask. You're like, yeah, not really.
Beer, you should know that Brian loves you just the way you are.
Exactly.
Yes. That's, you don't need to correct. Change a thing. Brian, are you ready to hear about some beers of the week?
I am, yes. Let's hear about them.
You know, we want to thank our friends at The Nest for sponsoring this segment. Big supporter of the show. We appreciate it. Nate, you made it out to The Nest recently. You were there last week, right?
Absolutely.
What'd you have, man? What'd you drink?
Pork rinds, some smoked wings, and I drank a whole lot. Sorry.
I didn't realize you could do that.
Yeah. Were they fresh pork rinds?
They were. They had the sriracha.
How was the carbonation?
It was a fresh. Gently carved.
Gently carved pork rinds. Good stuff.
You know, when you look at pork rinds, they do kind of look like a solid version of carbonation. A lot of air in there. So I'm not saying it's not necessarily CO2 that's in there, but go ahead.
What did you choose? He'd go on forever about these pork rinds being carbonated. So we're gonna. What beer did you choose to pair with your pork rinds?
I had a Trillium IPA. I don't remember the actual name for it, but the actual name of the beer, but it was a Trillium IPA. Yeah.
That Trillium one up there. Okay. See what you can get at the Nest. Go to the Nest, get some Trillium, get some carbonated or non-carbonated pork rinds, whichever your preference is. They usually run out of the carbonated ones fairly early. So you may just go ahead and order the non-carb, save yourself a little bit of time, but they're really good. Spicy. They put a nice dusting on them. That's pretty spicy there. Get you some wings or barbecue. Were they doing trivia or anything when you went, Nate? Because they rock trivia quite a bit up there. So
no, I just came up on a Friday night, just hung out.
So good times. The Nest, Kennesaw, Georgia, craft beer, barbecue, pork rinds, wings. So they've got pretty much everything you need. So thank you. We really appreciate your support. So for beers, Brian, right now I am drinking from Three Taverns Pils and Liberation. We had this one on deck last week. But I didn't get a chance to open it last week, so I'm into it right now. Having a little, this is a collaboration with Three Taverns Brewery here in Atlanta, Georgia, as well as Pilsner Urquell's Experimental Brewery, which I believe is called Pivovar Proud. I don't have it written down, but I think that's
Pivovar or Pivovar Proud.
Pivovar. But very cool, very tasty beer there. After I get into that, I'm hitting Billy's list again. Billy gets shout out 2 weeks in a row because he hooked us up with some great beers. And from Southern Pines here, I have a Malty by Nature, which is a Scottish export ale. So that's on deck for me, too. I did have a vintage, Brian, one from the cellar, a Bourbon County brand stout. that I was going to get into. And I looked at it, it said 2014. So I'm actually going to save it. I'm going to wait till it's a decade old before I get it.
Oh, yeah. So, that's smart. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm coming up on a decade. So we're going to wait and see how that that goes. Nate, because he is a connoisseur of fine things, has a little Genesee cream ale that he's going to be sipping on. From Octopi, we have a Belgian chocolate toffee vanilla stout, which sounds absolutely delicious. Brian is on that other half, a little all green everything triple IPA. And from Burial, we have this is all much too subtle to be translated to the intangible, woo, which is an imperial pastry stout. There,
there's a lot of stuff in that.
There's just a lot going on there, man. That is insane. So yeah, what's the pastriness in that one, Nate? Is that yours? Is the Burial one? Brian, tell me about that.
An imperial stout with toasted macadamia nuts, black winter truffles. I don't know what makes them black winter, but the black winter truffles, Madagascar vanilla beans, honey, and sea salt. It's a wow, it's quite the thing.
There's
a lot happening. I will say that part of the reason I picked it up is because I bought it locally and it's 15%, and that's naughty.
Oh.
I really shouldn't be saying it. I'm not ratting anybody out.
That one. That is crazy stuff.
Yeah. I saw that. But I love Burial stuff. So I'm happy to see it. And I'm hoping that this is a new era of people not caring about stupid laws like that. Like it's less than the ABV of a wine. Who cares?
Well, and for our non-Georgia listeners, Georgia has an ABV cap for beers at 14%. So finding something 15% is a little exciting.
We say we shouldn't say it, so Nate gives all the details. Here is exactly how we're breaking the law.
Sorry, folks. It just got pulled from the shelves thanks to Mo Mike Nate. So,
well, for those that aren't aware, if you go to so and so bottle shop,
you know what? If they do disappear, we will know that we actually have some folks in the government listening to the show.
Well, not necessarily, because they do watch out. They do watch out. But I did have one time the lieutenant governor, when he was introduced to me, Nancy Palmer from the Georgia Craft Brewers Guild, introduced me to our lieutenant governor, and he goes, "Oh, you're Beer Guys Radio." I'm like, "Yes, we are." This was, you know what? This was back when we were fighting those laws that we were talking about. We were rather vocal on it, and he made it very clear. You know what? The lieutenant governor knew who we were. He wasn't too thrilled with it, but he knew who we were.
That's big good time
stuff, man.
Well, very influential.
I'm actually moving on to the Malty by Nature right now, Brian, and I think we have some awesome stories to talk about. Again, acquisitions are in the air. Is that right?
They are. And the first story I have is an acquisition here. FX Matt Brewing Company is buying Brewing Dog. FX Matt Brewing Company is out of Utica, York, not New Jersey, Utica, New Jersey, New York. Sorry, man, I'm having issues with that. And of course, Flying Dog's from Maryland. We don't know any of the details of the transaction, but apparently this is a good fit because FX Matt has been contract brewing Flying Dog beers for a number of years. And Flying Dog's production will shift to New York with FX Matt Brewing by the end of August. And but they're going to maintain a innovation brewery in Frederick, Maryland, where Flying Dog used to be. Based on 2022 sales data, these two breweries together, had they been one item, they would have ranked in the top 10 of the craft breweries in the U.S. as ranked by the Brewers Association. So Flying Dog CMO Ben Savage will become the president of FX Matt's Flying Dog division. Flying Dog division. What a great thing.
What a great division.
Anyway, and how great would that be on a business card? But if you're not familiar with FX Matt, and I really didn't know the name, they've been around for 135 years, and they own Saranac, Utica Club, which I have heard of. I've seen a lot of vintage ads for them, and Flying Bison and several other non-beer beverage brands. And interestingly, Brooklyn Brewery owns a 20% stake in FX Matt. So it's kind of an interesting ownership situation here, but I didn't realize I'd never heard of them by that name. I'm well aware of Saranac, and I've seen the stuff from Utica Club. You have heard
their name and may not realize it, but the Brewers Association gives out the FX Matt Defense of the Industry Award. at the GABF.
Oh, okay. Year.
And if you remember, right, our very own Nancy Palmer was awarded that a few years ago. I forget the exact time, but yeah, they're one of those that they're a big name. And that, like you said, they own other breweries. You may not know them by their name, but you know them.
Yeah, 135 years. I saw it and I was like, this seems like a character from a movie from the 1980s who's he's fighting crime using his special effects capabilities.
Matt, yes.
Wasn't there a movie called FX or something like that? No, it was the basic
there's
idea. It was like, maybe
there was a channel.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know what I was thinking of, but so that's an interesting thing. Yeah, Flying Dog getting I'm curious how that's going to work out because these are more traditional brands, and they're Flying Dog is known for being kind of gonzo journalism, like the Hunter S. Thompson. They really don't care. They're very pro First Amendment. They really don't. They're really not too concerned about any kind of censorship. They like. They've actually pulled out. I think they, in I believe it was 2017. Don't have it written down in front of me, but they pulled out of the Brewers Association because they were concerned about rule changes that they viewed as censorship. So they're very strongly that way. But this other brewery, FX Matt, and all their properties are very much more conservative. I don't know how that's going to play out, but apparently they work together well. So
yeah,
we'll see.
I guess they did their due diligence. I am sure that they did that there. So Brian, I think it's time we tell folks about our good friends at Truck and Tap. Would you like to share about Truck and Tap?
You know what? I would. I love Truck and Tap. They've been with us from the very beginning. From I mean, before I was even involved in it.
Yes,
they were here. They were supporting us. It's a great place to go. 18 taps of beer, a different food truck every day. I mean, what's not to like? You've got a new beer every day, at least one, probably several new food every day. You can go back every day, very comfortable. You're used to the place, but you get new options all the time. So it's great for that reason. And you've got three choices of places to go to choose from. You can go to Woodstock's place, Georgia, where Tim's at, where you might see Tim. You can go to Alpharetta. They've got an Alpharetta spot. And they've got Duluth. You can go out to Duluth and then hang out, have a few beers there, go over and say hi to guys at the Good Word, but and then come back and drink a few more. And they also have the taps at Feast, which is great if you're looking like, the food trucks are neat, but I want something more Asian fare. Like I want really dedicated Asian food. And I think I want to have some sake, possibly some sake bombs and some cocktails. So you go to Taps at Feast in the Battery, and you can do all of these things and more.
You can, one of the things I love the most about it, Brian, is in my little town, we've got several restaurants, but there's some variety we're missing. We don't have a Cajun restaurant. We don't have, lobster rolls all the time and that. So I just wait for the truck that I want to roll around at Truck and Tap, and boom, it's right there.
I like things to change up, but I also am kind of lazy. So I like the idea of just walking into one. I'm like, well, what beers am I drinking today? And what food am I having? It's lobster. All right. I'm eating lobster and I'm drinking this new IPA from Old Nation. Maybe,
Exactly. Yeah, man. Good stuff. Yeah. Truck and Tap. Thank you so much. We appreciate your support as always, Brian. We always talk about crazy alcohol laws, and they're not just limited to the United States. So I heard about some crazy stuff potentially going on over in Ireland. What's up with that?
And I think it's more than potential. I think it really happened. I think it got signed into law. It's really going to happen. Ireland is introducing the world's first alcohol labeling policy. They are going to mandate health labeling on all alcoholic drinks, including the calorie content, the grams of alcohol, the risks of cancer and liver disease, which are fairly standard, I think, and also the pregnancy risks, which I think everybody knows. I think even in the U.S., the pregnancy thing is on all the cans, like don't drink if you're pregnant.
Right.
I'm interested in the grams of alcohol. I don't think I've ever been curious about the actual ounces, grams, whatever of the alcohol itself. The percentage was usually enough for me, but that's fine.
I guess if you're doing full essentially nutrition labeling, you got to put that on there, right?
I guess so. I guess that would make sense. So in addition to labeling on cans or bottles or whatever, the related information will have to be available in pubs and bars in Ireland, and the alcohol producers will be required to direct consumers from their websites to Ireland's health service website for additional information. The new law will take effect May of 2026, and that should in their thoughts, give businesses time to adapt to the policy. So they've got three-ish years to do that. The new law is said to already be causing some concern and some nervousness amongst other EU members, including Italy and their winemakers. I do like the idea. I'm a bit of a nutrition nerd, which seems weird because of who I am and what I do with myself. But I like the idea of that data being available, labels. And I think that the cost of compliance, and maybe you guys will have other thoughts on this, may make it so that Ireland simply loses access to, producers of alcohol, especially foreign producers that don't have the kind of money or the whatever, the logistics to make this happen. So they're just simply not going to, they're just going to disappear, I think. And so I think that this is well-intended, but I think there will be some consequences. What do you guys think?
I think I'm with you, Brian, that I think it's well-intended. I'd love to have that information available. There has been talk of doing that for brewers in the U.S., and the feedback that I heard from brewers, they're not concerned with the labeling. You know, they don't mind doing that, but you have to get your beverage fully tested at a lab to find out about those grams of alcohol and sugars and all of that stuff and calorie counts and everything. You can make estimates based on software. When we were homebrewing, we could plug all of our ingredients into a software that we had, and it would tell us that our Imperial Stout in a 12-ounce glass had 500 calories. You know, it would let us know that kind of thing. But they're going to have to go out and get this tested to get everything here, to get all the data they need to put on that label. And that's where the cost prohibitive fact comes into it. It could be there's certain things where they have to do this labeling if it's packaged. So if it was to go into effect here in the U.S., it would probably put extreme limitations on what went into distribution. You know, if they could keep it in their brewery and they're like, look, we don't have to do all this if it's just on our taps here in our brewery. If they had to put it on the taps in the brewery as well, it may just limit beer altogether. Because, we're right now, a brewery can pop out one or two new releases and put them on the taps in the tap room. If you've got to go through all this testing and that, even to do that, it's just going to cut down on the number of beer.
It sounds like in Ireland, they won't have the opportunity to do that. I think that because it has to be displayed or the information has to be available in the tap room, I think tap rooms, bars, pubs, right. I think that even if it's brewery only, they may have to do that. And
that's tough, man. Tough.
Yeah. Well, and the great thing is we had software that could estimate it. But here's the thing. All of the products going into it are agricultural products that vary from season to season, spot to spot. Maltster to maltster. And so the actual real number is just kind of a guess. Now, I get it. Within a certain percentage of accuracy is probably good enough, but I don't know if they'll be able to get away with this at a production level. It's going to be expensive, I think, unless technology picks up to the point where you can, have AI or something just evaluate a drop or two of this, your liquid, and just say, oh, this is what it's going to happen. So we may get to a point where this is very feasible and very easy to do. I don't know if we're there yet, but it would be neat to have it.
Again, it may be like anything else in a brewing lab. There's certain equipment that is cost prohibitive for a tiny brewery to get. You know, there was, I forget what it was recently. There was something I think there was a contamination in beer, and there was a fear that it may be widespread because they thought the contamination may have been coming from a yeast manufacturer. And I think it was Monday Night Brewing that said, hey guys, we have this machine in our lab that can test this. If any of you have any concerns, we'll be happy to test samples for you. It's not that the equipment necessarily isn't available. It's just that it's cost prohibitive, for a lot of breweries that, and if we're speaking of labeling, Billy's got a good point here. In his experience, beer does lead to pregnancy, and he thinks that should be put on the label.
That should be
if you've got to have warnings on the labels, that should be one of them for sure.
If you drink this, you may caution. Have children.
Yes. Yeah. Nate, what are your thoughts on all of this, sir?
Well, so Brian had a good point where how these are agricultural products that go into beer making, and season to season that could change. My thought is, since every beer has to be tested, what about these beers that, like, for instance, Wildleap has their alpha abstraction where they change the hop every time? Does that mean that 21 has to be tested in 22 and 23? Because they're a different beer, same malt bill, but a different hop. It makes me think that the rigidity of needing to test every beer potentially will, like you said, it'll be cost prohibitive, where that will likely just get turned on to the consumer, or they're going to cut production.
Yeah, and that's a good point, Nate. How much has to change before it has to be retested? You know, for the brewers that do that, hey, we're just swapping the hop here. You know, what is that enough to warrant retesting? So,
yeah. And one point there, it reminds me of talking to a brewer some years back where they were reusing yeast over and over again. And at a certain point, they had to stop at X number of generations because, interestingly, the yeast got super efficient. Like, they would wind up with beer that was exceeding the ABVs of what the targets were because it had basically evolved to become super consumers of the sugars, and they were just blowing it out. So you'd take an IPA and make it into a double IPA just over time with this yeast becoming more and more specialized. So I know a lot of breweries do that. They'll repitch yeast. They'll, you know, so that's also a concern. There's variation in every level. The hops, the yeast themselves evolve if you reuse them, and the malt, you know, so all of it, theoretically, the water will be roughly the same, I guess, every time, but that's about the only given.
And are the beers coming from the top, middle, or bottom of the tank?
That's right.
Because we all know that impacts a beer quite a lot. So I have to see.
You know what? Yes. Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see all that. You know, got some fun news here. Something I think is pretty fun. So our friends at Athletic Brewing, Brian, I'm so excited to see their growth. And I think that's because my doctor's orders to cut my alcohol consumption happened right about the time that they launched. So we've known these guys since they were, you know, younglings, and they've grown a little faster than we have. We don't have quite as many zeros on the end of our worth that they do as they do, but they've been successful and they're great people. So we've been happy to see it. But Athletic Brewing is now partnered with Netflix for a series of, I believe it's 3 beers. The first one's coming out in alignment with a very popular series, The Witcher, and this is going to be called Geralt's Gold. And it is a non-alcoholic hoppy Helles. I saw a cool video they did with it today for marketing, you know, out on the socials. And it doesn't show Geralt, but it's got, you know, the hand coming in and chugging the beer and slamming it back down. It just looks really, really cool. So that one's going to be available at their retailers, select retailers across the country, and on the website. If you're one of the first to purchase through the website, I think it's if you're one of the first 750 to purchase through the website, you can get a cool collector's glass there. But yeah, Geralt's Gold is the first one. I looked around, Brian, but I did not see any info on beers number 2 and 3. I don't know if they're planning to be partnered again with more of the Witcher series or with different series is there. But right now we know that Geralt's Gold is the first one. And Brian, something I think interesting is there is a lot of collaboration and even features in TV and movies of craft beer that we've seen around. Something here that I think is neat. So right now, Henry Cavill in season 3 is playing Geralt. I believe that they've said Liam Hemsworth is going to take over the role in season 4. And from what I saw on the internet, the diehard fans weren't big fans of Liam Hemsworth coming in there. But he will be Geralt. He can drink him some Geralt's Gold. Segway, Brian, his brother, Chris Hemsworth, who played Thor in Avengers Endgame, drank Creature Comforts Tropicalia as well as Athena in that movie. So
we heard a lot about that one.
We did hear a lot about that here. That was big. That was big stuff in Georgia beer. That was big, big stuff in Georgia beer. But yeah, a neat little cameo there. Craft beer cameos, Brian, I think is what we'll call them. What do you know of any? Can you think of any off the top of your head that you remember seeing and be like, oh, look at that?
Well, the one I always think of is Thor drinking the beer back in that movie. He had the pot belly. He'd been kind of strung out a little bit. And I'm like, oh,
right.
I identify with Fat Thor. That feels like me. I think I'd seen a bunch of them, but the one that I did some Googling, and aside from that, the only one that really jumped out at me is beer cameos. Narragansett from New England. I actually forget where exactly they're from. They were in Jaws in 1975.
Wow. And
I was reading a story where one of the actors, I think the guy who portrayed Quint, had a monologue, and he decided he wanted to do it when he was just ripped. So he drank a ton of that And they recorded it. And then because he was so incoherent, they actually recorded it when he was sober. But apparently, I think some of the footage of him being hammered on this was in the movie. So I don't know. There were a lot of articles out there about, did they really drink beer, or were they just, was it just staged? Was it, you know, like weak tea? Was it really beer? So that's kind of a thing too, but the cameos are fun. Wasn't there one that we saw? I forget what the movie was. It just came to mind. North River Tavern, and you could see in the background they had the Monday Night Tap handles back from the old Thai days.
Was it that movie Tag?
Yes, I think it was Tag.
So I think it was in the movie Tag. We knew that they filmed a scene at North River Tavern, which I think that's technically Roswell, Georgia, where Roswell, Sandy Springs, somewhere in there. But the movie was set in California. And when they shot at North River Tavern and they showed the back of the bar, it had all these taps on it. And several of them were beers that were Georgia beers and only Georgia beers.
Definitely.
So I was like, oh, wait a minute, guys. I know this. I know enough about this topic to know this one. That's not a bar in California because those are Georgia beers. So that was a fun one.
That's always exciting when you see, like, hold on, I know it's just like the if you watch Bad Grandpa or something like that with Robert De Niro, it was filmed in my neighborhood. I know the building, and I actually saw him smoking cigars and getting thrown around or whatever. But you know, has nothing to do with beer. So let's
Will
get back
Smith
to the beer.
Was down in your neighborhood recently, I think. Bad Boys, whatever.
Oh,
number
yeah,
it
you
is.
Mentioned
he was
that.
Down there filming that. So
I didn't see anything, but yeah, you know what? We have I do see the movie, the specialized movie signs about filming various things all over the place, driving around town. So
yeah,
we have a lot going on here.
You know, not to be all Georgia, but I guess we hear about a lot of these because we're in Georgia, but The Walking Dead actually featured a lot of local beer. Jailhouse Brewing, who is unfortunately no longer open, they were featured in the show. Terrapin was featured in the show. Sweetwater, of course. You know, Sweetwater is kind of ubiquitous with Georgia beer there, but Terrapin did a collaboration with The Walking Dead, but I'm almost sure I remember Spike telling me that the collaboration was not with the TV show, but with the graphic novel folks. And apparently those were different. I actually think they did a couple potentially with it. Didn't they do one like named after that barbed wire bat or something? And I guess
that sounds vaguely familiar, but I don't remember.
They did. Yeah. It was like the Blackstrap molasses.
It was. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, were you a fan, Nate? Do you know what that bat was called? Was it Lucille or something?
I think
like
it was
that?
Lucille. Yeah.
Yeah, there's people who will hear this and will know. They're like, oh my gosh, that's so-and-so. How does he not know that? So
I may have seen that and had no idea.
Yeah, like,
You know what? To tie things back to a previous story, I never watched it, but I think you watched it, Tim. True Blood, they apparently had Flying Dog in there a fair amount.
Yeah, and so. I think Abita was in that one too, if I'm
was
not. I love True Blood, and this another show that the last two seasons, they really fell off, but that was one of my favorites there for a while, but I think they had a beat in there. I know Shiner Bach was in the movie Death Proof. Some TV shows when Upland was in Parks and Rec, and Walter White ordered a fat tire at a bar in Breaking Bad. Dells Pelel was in the movie Tammy with Melissa McCarthy. And the show Drinking Buddies, which was a series, a one season series on, I think, Netflix that launched in early 2020. And in early 2020, for those who weren't around with us at this time, I had what they call a bilateral pulmonary embolism and spent a week in the hospital, them telling me, hey, don't die. When I got out, I got COVID. When I got over COVID, I was laid off from my job. And the worst thing to happen to me in the first quarter of 2020 was watching the show Drinking Buddies.
I was going to say, quit bragging so much.
Right. So
I think I watched part of that and I'm like, no, I can't. Sorry. And I like the actors in it. They were some really good actors in it. And I like, theoretically, the premise seemed like a good idea. I'm like, it's craft beer related, but no.
But they featured Revolution, Half Acre, Three Floyds, Founders, and Bells at one time or another in that show. So they did a lot, plenty of crafty cameos in there. Brian, I wonder if any of these beers featured in any of these TV shows were in like a 19.2 ounce can. Do you know? That seems like something you would track personally.
You know what? I'm going to say no, because I don't recall ever seeing that, but I'm not 100% sure. I haven't seen all of them. I did see a list of beer cameos in movies and TV, and the list I saw was like 57 different shows. So it's possible I missed one, but
I think you're mixing up your stories. You're thinking of that fake beer, aren't you? The one that's the prop
you're
beer.
Right. You're right. The prop.
What was the name of that one? Nate, can you go back in our Discord channel and see what the name of that beer was? But because it's one that's been featured in a lot of TV shows, because it's kind of the Hollywood fake beer there.
It's like Heisler. And it was like Heisler. Always Sunny. I think that's it, Heisler.
Yeah.
It's in Always Sunny. It's in Brooklyn Nine-Nine. It's I must have seen it a million times. It never registered. Correct. You know what? You're right. I was getting confused with that. And that's not really the story I had. But in terms of stovepipes, the 19.2, they are, in fact, on the rise. But what do you guys think of them? Do you like that format before I even get into it? Are you cool with the 19.2, or is that too much?
I think they're sexy, but it's too much for me, Brian. Of any one beer, I'm really bad about, you know, I want to drink a half pour. Or a 12-ouncer is plenty for me because I want to move on to something else. Typically, the exception to that is if I'm out at a cool brewery or beer bar that's doing like a Kolsch service, or they've just got some nice crispy boys on, I'll just sit there and keep those coming. But if I have the choice and I'm sitting around, I'm usually going to switch it up before I'll go through a 19.2 ounce long beer.
So you think a 19.2 of 15% stout is a bad idea?
It is for me. You're a lush though, so you go for it, man. So.
Here's the thing. 19.2 ounce cans, stovepipes, are craft beer's number one dollar growth driver, just ahead of the standard 12 pack of 12 ounce cans. Craft 19.2 ounce retail sales are up 57% this year, like versus last year at the same time. And a lot of this growth is actually driven by New Belgium's Voodoo Ranger line, which anytime you go to a convenience store, if you're looking at the stovepipes, you're going to see some Voodoo Ranger. It's just a given. Why? That's the thing everybody's kind of wondering. What the heck is the deal with these? Here's the thing. Convenience store stovepipe cans of beer are for a different occasion than any other beer out there. You've probably noticed they're always refrigerated, and that's important because the majority of them are consumed within an hour of purchase. The higher ABVs are popular, and they're almost all of them are higher ABVs, because they give the effect of several beers without the inconvenience of carrying around several cans. So the idea is somebody's picking this up in lieu of carrying around a six pack, and the ABV is high enough, so they're going to get most of the effect of a six pack of lighter beers. Also from the production side, this is the largest size that you can use a standard can end on, without making major modifications to your canning line. So you can optimize the amount of fluid going out into a single vessel without changing up your entire system. But here's the thing. Don't look for these to show up, you know, from a lot of smaller breweries anytime soon, because they do require, you know, flexibility in your canning and buying a lot of new sized cans that you wouldn't ordinarily get. And the pricing of 19.2 ounce cans are pretty competitive with the macros. So they are keeping the price down a fair amount. So it's tough if you're not producing a great deal of volume. Most breweries will not find, you know, at a smaller scale, won't find that this is worth their hassle. So the pop quiz. Who was the first craft brewer to put beer into a 19.2 ounce can? Anybody know? Any guesses?
Was it Oscar Blues with Dale's Pale?
Oh my God. You got it. Did you read the article?
No.
Okay. I was actually going to go back further than that. I'm like, I bet one of our grandpapa's beers pulled off some 19.2s, but no, good one, Nate. Good one.
I think that it was Dale's Pale Ale, though. I know Anchor Steam, when they put it first, the first time they put it in cans, according to All About Beer, our buddies at All About Beer, they did, in fact, put it in 19.2, but I think they were after Dale's Pale Ale, and Dale's Pale Ale did it in like 2010, I want to say.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Dale's was the first craft beer in a can. Is that right?
I believe so.
I heard that because I remember they faced a lot of backlash for it, because at the time, craft beer was in bottles. You know, it didn't come in a can. You know, they were one that fought and stuck to their guns to make that move to cans there.
It took a lot of time to convince people that cans were a good thing for craft beer. So,
indeed.
Yeah, it they fought against, and they were, in the end, they were successful, arguably too successful, because everybody started buying up the cans and there was a can mm-hmm. shortage, and then they had to contend with that. So, you know, yeah. theoretically, it came back to bite them in the end. But yes, they have been tremendously successful with that.
I went in the other day, Brian. I stopped by the convenience store to buy a 19.2 ounce of beer. And, you know, I got a little bit of gray hair. I'm obviously over 21, but the cashier is like, can I see your ID? And I'm like, I left it in the car because I use my Apple Pay on my watch a lot to pay. Mm-hmm. So, and I just left my wallet locked in my car, but they're like, well, we have to have ID. I was like, is there anything they can do about this? And they're like, can I see your hand? And I had no idea what that was about, Brian. Do you know anything about that?
Did you show them your hand?
I did. I had to scan it. Brian. Yeah,
so here's the crazy thing. At some point in time, when you get carded, you will just be able to show people the hand, and that will be enough. And that's because people will start using a service like Amazon's Amazon One service, which allows you to use your palm print to both pay bills and get age verification, basically. They're rolling out the age verification thing. So that's set to launch in November's in Denver's Coors Field starting May 22nd, which, you know what? I think that's actually passed. I think it has already happened.
It is.
So they have rolled it out.
All right.
Yeah. I wrote it down and read the article. I didn't realize that it's already passed. So theoretically you can go into the Coors Field, show your hand, get a name, age verification, and then pay for your beer all with doing that and just go back to your seat. So that's what they're going for. That's all through Amazon. To enroll in that, you basically have to go onto their website, or I think they have on-site locations, maybe at Coors Field, where you give them a palm print, you give them a selfie, and then you give them a picture of your photo ID. And so they can use that. They tie that all into your account. And the next time you need to get verified or just buy something, you just wave your hand, and that's what you get. You get your beer or whatever you're buying. So what do you guys think? Is that kind of crazy, or is that good?
You know what? I got a bone to pick with Nate in a minute, but let me address your story first. I don't like it, Brian. I don't like it. I don't want my body involved in anything. I'm all about cell phones, using my watch, all of that. I'll do the Apple Pay. I'll do this and that. I don't want to bring biometrics into this. You know, the most I go is my phone. My phone before had a thumbprint scanner. The one I've got now has got facial recognition. That's really as far as I want to go as far as bringing my body into it. You know, let me validate my device with my thumbprint or my face scan. But then if you want something with me, Georgia recently became one of the states that would allow you to put your driver's license in your Apple wallet. So you can scan the front and the back of your driver's license. You do a bunch of pictures of your face and send it off, and the DMV validates it. And then it's a legal form of ID from your phone or your watch. So
I had no idea.
I'm cool with that kind of stuff, but keep it off my body. Keep it off my body.
What if it was like a footprint? You know, like a little hard to come at. You have to take it.
No means no. I don't want my body involved in this. You can use my phone, my watch, something like that.
An elbow print, maybe?
To the dome. I'll give them an elbow print to the dome as ID.
I was oddly not as uptight or as upset about this as I think I should have been.
Okay. Yeah.
But I kind of see what you're saying. I don't want to give an entire palm print to Amazon for anything.
Coors Field, I mean, to Amazon.
Or to Coors Field.
Right. Yeah.
Now, theoretically, I know from working with software, theoretically, Coors Field would not store any of that. But we know the TSA has gotten in trouble for storing pictures of people getting scanned, going through security, and there's been scandals about that. So I don't believe anybody is really honest when it comes to these things. They're not really deleting anything. They just say they do. The convenience, though, of just waving your hand and getting it paid for.
You're saying that because it's beer.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, right. Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. But interesting tech. Nate, I need to see your beer can right now.
Uh-oh. Is he got a Jenny Cream or is
The other one. The Jenny can. Oh, it is a Jenny cream. Okay. All right. My bad. My apologies, Nate. My apologies. I saw the can go up and I was like, I don't think that's a Jenny cream. I think that's a different Genesee beer.
No bone picking required.
Okay.
A Jenny ice because those are fun.
But my take on it, I agree with you guys. I'm out. I don't agree with Brian, but I'm out. I don't want my palm print to be stored at Amazon. I keep my wallet on my person at all times. So if I'm in line, it's just as easy for me to flash my ID at them as it is for me to wait for the palm reader to scan my palm like 53 times. It's going to fail 52 times.
Yeah. It was declined.
That's a fair point.
Nate's body gets declined. He's like, the worst day ever.
He's guys. So denied. Now, I got to say that of all of us, I'm the most likely to want to pay cash and just be completely anonymous with the transaction. Yep. So, yeah, I could see me going up to it because I do that with a lot of like little things I get. I'm like, especially if I go to a drugstore and get anything that's relevant to any kind of condition that I might have going on in my body. I'm like, I don't want anybody to know about this. I might be a little ashamed of this. Take my cash and let me leave anonymously. So.
Yeah, they're yelling out your name and what your prescription is for. Like, come on, man. Give me a break here.
Give me a break.
Good stuff. Well, y'all, that about wraps it up for this episode of the Beer Guys Radio Show. We got fun stuff coming up. I think I mentioned this already, but we have secured our guest for our Lager Deep Dive Show. That's going to happen in about a month to get everyone's schedule coordinated. But we have Todd DiMatteo from Good Word Brewing. We have Joran and Sean from Halfway Crooks. If you know lagers, you're going to know Halfway Crooks and Good Word. But they're going to go on. We're going to start with a little style review, brewing tips, yeast, all that. Everything you need to know about lagers is going to be in there. If you hear this and there's something that you want to know that you think we may not think of, drop us a line. Let us know what you want to hear. You heard us mention earlier our Discord chat. We would love for you to join us on Patreon, support the show. If you support at the $5 level or above, we'll give you access to our members-only Patreon Discord channel where we have some really good chats and also some complete stupidity on there. So it's a good time all around. But we thank you for tuning in for this week's show. We'll be back next week for another live stream, 7 o'clock on Wednesdays. New episodes drop on our podcast players Saturdays at 6 a.m. out there bright and early for you. For more craft beer info, follow us on all the socials. We're Beer Guys Radio, pretty much anywhere that you go on the socials. And make sure to validate my shorts video efforts there. So thanks for tuning in. Have a great week. And don't forget to drink local. Cheers.